And when it comes to sex, I value sexual, sacrificial love, sexual, compassionate love, sexual, friendship love, sexual, true friendship. I value sexual, unconditional love, and I value sexual, neighborly love, because all areas of my life, including sex, are filled with unconditional love, compassionate love, neighborly love, sacrificial love, and compassionate love. Compassion, love, sacrificial love. I just had to say it again. So, I think about how I value sexual honesty. I deplore sexual dishonesty. I think that when it comes to the concept of sexual soul ties, they're actually good when it comes to me. Soul ties are not bad when it comes to me. Again, I value sexual soul ties because, again, soul ties are not bad when it comes to me. It's not about entrapment nor bondage. It's all about liberty and freedom for me. Because I'm not in sexually unwholesome situations. I'm in sexually wholesome situations. For me, I value catering to each other sexually, healthily speaking. And not just with body, but with soul. And then I'm into soul sex, heart-centered sex, person-centered sex, body-centered sex, mindful sex, mind-blowing sex, of course. And I have all the erotic blueprint types. I have all the sexual personality types. I am completely sexually versatile all around in every which way. And I explore all my fetishes and entire body parts and entire souls, entire bodies, and in every which way too. And then when it comes to myself sexually, I'm trying to think. I've been thinking more sexually. I have genuinely thought about, when it comes to sex, do we sing? Do we rap? Do we joke? What's our comedy genres, comedy styles? Do we not do any of these things? Do we do sexual impersonation, sexual impressions, or do we just totally be ourselves sexually without impersonations and impressions, sexually speaking? Did we scream each other's names? Did we ask each other what's our name? And how do we, when it comes to sex for me, sex is all around communication, all around art, all around truth, all around wisdom, all around clarity, all around discernment. What is our sexual learning styles? How do we process sexual information? How do we even sexually process sexual information? And how do we feel about public sex, private sex, those things that talk, that has to be talked about with partners. And if I was a porn company head, which I will be in the future, all the genres, all the tags, all the descriptions, and all the videos would clearly show ethical sex, ethical sexuality, and no one would be sexually dismembered nor dishonored. It would be about healthy sexual exhibitionism, healthy sexual voyeurism as well. I hate sexual hypocrisy. I love sexual genuineness. So, what else do I have to say? I really gotta talk about this out. So, my last statements on sex for me would be that, another reason why I'm non-monogamous is because my sex drive is too high for one person to totally handle all on their own. Now let's talk about organized crime. I grew up I'll actually talk from my heart on this one. When it came to organized crime for me, close my eyes when I tell this story, so it could really be all the way real on this, because it's quite traumatic. I remember there were some mafia guys, a couple of them, actually four of them, who did have gay sex, and they were caught, but because these guys who had gay sex, it was understood that they could fight back and strike back, meaning, we got guns too. We can throw them hands too. They weren't kicked out of the mafia because you can't kick out my brother or my sister. They family. They part of our family. That's the only reason why they're allowed to stay. Because they acted stereotypically manly, the gay sex was tolerated even when they didn't like it. I remember that within the mafia. Because it was like, no, don't kill so-and-so. That's my cousin. That's my brother. That's my... No. That was interesting. It's like certain... The mafia's not all the same. In fact, I remember the mafia telling me they hated how they were depicted within television movies. Like, these... You know, how they make us look. They make us look like these evil ass assholes. It's not fucking true about us. We laugh more than we do crime. We don't do crimes all the time. We fun loving happy-go-lucky motherfuckers. That's who the fuck we are. That's who the hell we are. You know, we do way more positive and negative than they fucking show about us. I remember the mafia, they hated how they were depicted in cinematography and filmography, because they felt like, man, they make us look like a bunch of goddamn savages. That's not us either, damn it. That's what they were saying about us. And I remember them also saying this. They basically felt like that they were inaccurate portrayals about them. Yes, and most of the mafia people did get kicked out for being gay or trans. Some got killed, most lived, and most survived. But there was a couple that they were about to, but it was like, but why would you? They make us so much money. They hustle so much drugs for us, and they are our go-to connections with the Mexican drug cartels that Antonio's a part of. They put my name at that Antonio's a part of. Just leave it alone. And so they just, once my name was used, that's when they were like, all right, y'all can do y'all thing. As long as y'all are very manly about it and y'all don't engage in any feminine characteristics when we're out in public, y'all can be yourselves in private. Those were the only two. That was the only time I remember a person being allowed to be in the mafia, and they were gay and trans, but they didn't present it in public. Their voices were deep and acted tough, but you know. But most of the time with the mafia, I remember them kicking out people, killing certain people, letting certain people live and survive, but still kicking them out of the mafia. But that one instance, that it was because, well, these Mexican drug cartels, connections of ours in the mafia who are getting trans, I mean, they also kill well for us. They also beat up people well for us. They rob people for us. So, you know, kicking them out is basically kicking out the brains and the bronze of our operations. We can't do that. That was the only reason why they were tolerated. And now when it came to, like, you know, the portrayals of them in the media, the mafia is like, we're actually nice people. We're not, we're much nicer than meaner, man. We eat, we go to movies like everybody else. We watch TV. We have our shows. We go to concerts. We go to clubs. We do what everybody else does. We're actually, we even give tithes and offerings to the church. We even, like, you know, visit people in the hospital, nurse them back to health. We do nice shit way more than we do the harsh shit. That's what the mafia told me when I was 5. And, I can say this for certain. The mafia that I was a part of, the Italian mafia, just like the Mexican drug cartels was a part of, they all are filled with pride and greed and wrath and envy and lust and gluttony and sloth. For real. They really are. Those are the 7 aspects of organized crime that religious people call the 7 deadly sins. And then, I remember, being around the Mexican drug cartels and Italian mafia. They have all of the characteristics of each and every personality disorder that exists. And they have all the characteristics of psychopathy, narcissism, sociopathy, what I call psychopathy. Psychopathy is a mixture of narcissism, sociopathy, and psychopathy. They have all those traits. I saw them all. And I do remember in the world of organized crime, I remember helping women move out of their homes. I remember helping women moving out of their homes because I was helping them flee their abusive life partners who were men. You know, boyfriends, husbands, what have you. And I remember a couple of times where I disguised my voice on the phone when the women told me to call the police. Those are the only about, I did about, trying to remember the number. There were about 8 instances, at least, where the women told me to call the police because they needed help to get the abusive men out. Those were only 8 times I called the police. And I helped them move out. I helped them put their belongings in a U-Haul move-in truck. I helped them move into their new place. Because they're like, you know, I remember helping them. I remember at times helping them with their families. Because they're like, who's that? Who's that little boy? Oh, Antonio. Oh, this is Antonio. He's just, you know, I'm babysitting him. And he's just helping out. like, oh, hey, Tony, how you doing? I'm doing, and I was well-mannered to them, hugged them, shake their hand. They lied to them and said I was babysitting, but they know that actually I was the one protecting them. They just like, oh, he's, you know, I'm babysitting him, make sure he's okay. You know, parents on the job, looking out for him. But last night before I helped him move out, there was a scuffle between the abusive men and the woman. I saw it, and I have to be honest, I beat the shit out of those guys because the guy started the scuffle. So as soon as the guy hit, the woman hit back first. I was like, she gonna thrash him. After she thrash him, I'ma finish it. So I finished the thrashing because a part of me was like, I hope she gets at least, she gets some good lickings in. Not sexually, I'm talking about, that's old school for, you know, sucker punching and sucker slapping. And I don't mean to come off like celebrating violence, I'm not. But I'm just telling you that was the language used in the world of organized crime. And he swung on her first, and she was beating on him. Then I finished it off. I told her, I got the rest of this, you know. I got this. Usually, I would, as soon as the guy hit first, I would hit back. But she was like, you know, let me get at him. So I was like, okay. Then I told her, all right, you good to go. I'm going to handle him myself. And I did. That happened about 8 times. And so the women like, okay, these were all different women. Like, I need help to move out, and, you know, I'm too scared to call the police. I said, I'll do it. You sure? Yeah, I'll just not use my real voice. So I disguised my voice. I could voice act well. And called the police. And because I sounded, I used my soprano voice, it was assumed that, ma'am, okay, I'll be there in a few, right? So I used my soprano singing type voice, you know, soprano voice, and the guy was able to get arrested, and those guys were too afraid to report to the police that you just got beaten the shit out of by a 5-year-old. And so they showed up with bruises, and they assumed that the woman self-defended herself. In actuality, most of those bruises that were visible were because of me. And I'm not glorifying any of this. This is all fucked up and all shitty. I just want to say that on record, everything that was said and done, thought and felt, this is all fucked up and shitty. And I had to help them move. And it was a tough process. It wasn't something easy at all to do. And I remember at times, sometimes calling the police because the women had to go to the hospital and they had to get some surgeries and bandages, and they were 100% back to health, which I was always grateful, humble about. I remember helping them, you know, change their cell phone numbers, change their addresses, and change their tax information, their economic financial information, their credit, bank card, and bank account information, so the partners wouldn't find out. And I remember it's me and their friends, and they would tell their friends, oh, he's babysitting. They're like, but he's helping you. Yeah, he likes to help. You know, he likes to make sure I'm okay. I make sure he's okay. You know, it's my buddy. I'm just babysitting him. A lot of times I was in women's houses, not just them. I was always in women's houses, and they all used the, you know, babysitting service lie. All the time. And I feel like, I remember constantly in men's houses, you know, organized crime, people invite you over to their house, and the dudes would say, oh, you know, I'm just, they would say the whole, you know, I'm just, you know, saw this kid by himself, making sure he's safe, kids got to be safe. And people would buy it. They're like, oh, an adult looking out for a kid. Okay, cool. Nobody cared, but those men lied, just like the women did. Some of them were criminals. Some were actually civilians. In fact, it was more civilian men, civilian women, you know, telling these lies more than the criminal men, criminal women. I was always in the homes of civilian women the most, civilian men the least, out of all the civilians. When it came to the criminal men and the criminal women, I was in the criminals' women's homes the most and criminal men's home the least. And they all told the same lie of babysitting, servicing. And, in these homes, in the criminal homes, of course, all types of crimes are happening in these homes. And in the civilian homes, all, you know, more appropriate things happen. In a couple of homes, some inappropriate things happen. Sexually, it could be, you know, accidentally overhearing them with their partner and them apologizing to me. Overhearing meaning sex, and, you know, walking by, accidentally seeing it, and they apologize, you know, because they forgot to completely close the door so you can see the creak, and then they were like, oh my God, I'm sorry. With the criminal men, criminal women, they just did all types of crimes, but they knew not to, you know, be violent with women. Just no. And they knew I was sensitive to violence against men, so if they did those things, which I think they did, they knew not to do it in front of me, but they did all the other, you know, type of crimes. None of this makes sense, I know. It's all savagery. Every organized crime I told you is 100% savagery. I grew up with a lot of neglect and a lot of abandonment too. And you know, that's why I think I had to really, really, as I say in closing, organized crime, all types of inappropriateness happened to me in that world, directly and indirectly. And to sum it all up, not because of the whole entire telling the stories, I'm not. I would say that in organized crime, you know, like in people's homes, you know, they did pretty much everything that people in their homes, you know, you watch TV, you cook, you eat, and they shared all their stuff with me. I would go to women's homes the most because they're like, after we would hang out, they're like, I want to spend more time with you, come to my home. So I, of course, like when it came to civilian men, women, and criminal men and criminal women, I spent more time in homes, and I spent more time in houses and apartments, mostly houses and apartments. I remember that. And I had all types of experiences in organized crime. The labels of them would be good, great, bad, and ugly. And some people go, what about good and great? What are you talking about? Well, what is commonly called that, meaning, it's hard to explain. They weren't always doing crimes, and they weren't always acting evil. There were times where they weren't loud, weren't name calling, weren't killing, weren't being violent, weren't stealing. And there were times where they left people alone. And there were times where they donated to charities. Not just churches, even though they donated to churches. Churches liked their money, but the church didn't know that they were criminals. And they weren't always behaving negatively. But overall, organized crime is completely bad. It's organized crime has its own duality that is just impossible to understand. It's impossible for me to understand. I was thrusted in it. And I'm not saying that organized crime is good. Don't misconstrue that. It is completely bad. I'm just saying that when what people call good and great about a person's behavior regarding experience of organized crime, what I'm saying is that they weren't always as bad as they usually were. There were times where I remember they were chilling by themselves or with people and nothing bad would happen. So I wanted to paint the complete picture of organized crime, because I had to be honest about it. But I'm not justifying any part of organized crime. I hate all organized crime. I hate all aspects of organized crime. And so I remember going to social places with these civilians and criminals who were all men and women. It could be movies, it could be carnivals, it could be roller coasters type carnival. It could be amusement parks, it could be going to spas with them, whether it was a spa massage place or a nail spa or beauty salons or barbershops or the homes of people that were family and people who are not family to them. I remember being in just going to grocery stores and malls. I remember catching the bus and the train with them. They mostly drove, but sometimes they're like, let's walk around and catch, you know, something together. A bus and train. Sometimes I was riding taxis and cabs with them. And sometimes we go for a walk and talk. I remember we were playful with each other. We watched TV together. We would go to games, sporting games together. We would actually play games together. And even we played video games together, I remember. We pretty much did all the social things that most people do with each other. Everything socially you could think of, publicly and privately, we did together. And those are all the experiences of organized crime that I experienced at the age of 5. I'm doing this whole episode off the top of my head, and you can tell I'm doing that because I slow down, I choose my words more carefully, I make more time to do so. So let's start with sex, then I'll end with the organized crime part of my childhood, then there'll be the last episode where I talk about sex and organized crime. And I don't know how long my vacation from those subjects will be, but if I ever talk about it again, that means, which I will do in the future for sure, certainty, I'm gonna go for at least a month, maybe a little bit longer than a month. Let's go for a month. Let's talk about it. What I learned with sex, I got more insights on it. I think a lot of times people, like me and my best friend from college were talking about this. This definitely inspired this part of the episode. We were talking about how it's sex, a lot of people zone out. You know, the mind wandering that happens with sex, that sometimes people are not focused on the humanity of their partners, not even focused on their partners, not even focused on the inner and outer electrical adrenaline rushes of the figures of the partners, bodily speaking, as well as the personality component of their partners, temperamentally speaking. You know, the revved up, charged up batteries part of a part of the emotions in relation to sex, erotically speaking. A lot of times people engage in what is called mind wandering. It's like your partner could be giving you a sexual command or a sexual suggestion or asking a sexual question or making a sexual statement. And sometimes with mind wandering with sex, sometimes people respond quickly, or their partner keeps communicating to them sexually and they're still so into the sexual acrobatics, the sexual gymnastics and sexual Olympics that it's like they're hearing it, but they're not listening. Or they're so zoned out, they're not even hearing or listening at all. All they're so into is the penetration part of sex. And with sex, you're not supposed to miss sexual bodily cues, sexual inner life cues that you and your partners experience, and you can't miss any of these cues because your partners want you to know how to give them total stimulation and absolute satisfaction. Okay, so for example, if you're given a sexual command, a sexual question, a sexual suggestion, or a sexual statement, don't just go along with it and then go back to doing what you were doing. Because a lot of times, I've seen this in certain types of porn, all legal, of course, where it's like, let's say and I'm sorry to be heteronormative about it, but, you know, the porn industry is learning how to be more and more inclusive, more importantly, making LGBTQ+ people feel and know that we belong, right? Let's say a man is having a woman straddle him, saddling up, as it's called in the industry, person on top position, right? It's usually a woman, but in certain instances, it could be a man on top of a man, but it's usually a man having a woman on top of him. And let's say, we've seen this in porn, let's say she tells or asks him to give her an erotic spanking, for example. He'll only do it quickly one time or do it quickly multiple times, but all these times that he does it, it happens real fast and he's going back to the penetrating on top person position. Another thing I've seen in porn is sometimes the guy can still, let's say he's doing the backdoor vaginal position or the backdoor anal position, because backdoor could be both vaginal or anal when it comes to men and women. And I'm not saying this. None of this happens with gay porn. Some gay porn, all these things happen. And transgender porn, some of these things happen. I'm not dissing any type of porn. I'm just saying, in certain porn films, you will see this, whether it's gay or straight or trans or non-binary queer, you know? But usually porn is so, a lot of mainstream porn is tends to be heteronormative. So let's say the man is having the woman do a backdoor sex position. It could be vaginal or anal or even both. Because sometimes the woman is like, okay, take it. Well, she says, but I'm going to say it in a more gentle way. Okay, take it out of my vagina and now put it in my rectum. But in porn, obviously, they say it in the obvious crass ways. So it could be the man just talking and looking at her gluteus maximus, her behind. And he'll just remark on it. It's as if he's still in the mentality of, I see a gorgeous woman and I'm in the checking her out face of the, you know, the whole dynamics between me and her. It's as if he's still forgetting or not fully in the present moment of, okay, after he checked her out, y'all are not having sex. So sometimes they talk to him as if they're not having sex. Or, ooh, she looked like this, she looked like that. Oh, man. Or they'll say her name and, wow, such and such. I'm like, okay, but you can't just talk about the body part and penetrate. And it's like, no, you still have to be in the present moment. Yes, you can compliment her body part, but don't talk about her as if she's not there. And don't talk to her as if she's not there. Okay. Ooh, her behind is this. Oh my God. Daughter. Man, and my wood is, it's getting stiff, man. It's like, why are you talking about her in first, second, or third person? Why are you talking about yourself first, second, third person? That is all weird. And I've seen this a lot in porn. It's like, you have to do more than just penetrate or look at that behind. It's like, if you're not willing to fully explore it, then why are y'all having sex? Why is the penetration going on? It's like, okay, you have to do more than just penis hard penetrate. There's more. You have to caress. Okay, let's say you're a butt person, right? You have to caress it. You have to lick it. You have to fingertip it. You know, touch. You know, poke, prod, pinch. No harm, but, you know, just saying. And tongue it. Slurp it. Suck it. Want to eat it out? Sure. And slap it. Don't be harmful again. And grasp it, squeeze it. But again, no pain. And I noticed that they're like, well, I'm such a... They, you know, I don't, you know, I'm saying it without being crass, but you get the point. Well, I'm a butt man. They don't say it that way in porn, obviously. But it's like, if you're really that, then you should fully explore what your fetishes are. A lot of guys think, if I just, you know, bend it over and be like, oh my God, it's fat. Da 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 da. The problem with that was, if you really like it, why aren't you touching it? In fact, in some cases, they barely touch. I'm like, you don't understand what a healthy fetish is. A fetish is when it's more than just your genitals. You use your hands. You use your mouth. You use, hell, you willing to even use your feet. That's how it's obvious that you really like this body part, because you're willing to go above and beyond in a healthy way. I want mouth stimulation of it, not just general stimulation of it, but I want mouth stimulation of it, I want hand stimulation of it, feet stimulation of it. That's proof that you really like your fetish. So a lot of times when guys say in porn, I'm a butt man, they don't say it that way. I just don't feel like saying it crass. Sometimes I have to say things crass. Sometimes wisdom just does. I just don't feel like saying things crass sometimes. Sometimes I can state the crass truth without always being crass about it. That's a healthy truth teller right there. So it has always been weird to me that sometimes a guy will talk about her behind. Okay, you're having sex. You can actually explore it. Don't just go, oh, I like this, I like that, I like her behind the way in shape, da da da. You're having sex with her, so actually appropriately indulge in it. Because a lot of times guys treat sex as, you gotta talk about the sex while it's happening. No, well, you gotta do more than that, but don't talk about it as if you're not having sex. And don't talk about her body part as if you're not allowed to pleasure it. And it's kind of like a lot of guys with sex, when it comes to like a woman's breast or something. It could be a breast, chest, you know, that. Let's go there, because those are the typical body parts of women that a lot of guys, they just go with their friends. They talk about, man, I like this, I like that. And they say it crass about women's bodies. I like this, I'm into that. Da-da-da-da. But when it's time for the sex to be had, there's little to no engagement. Sometimes there's mostly disengagement or no engagement at all. And sometimes it's total disengagement. I'm just like, do you know what liking the body parts even mean? Or are you just, I'm hyped up, I'm amped up, I'm peer pressured, but it's okay to, or it's okay to not be into it as much or at all as your homies are, or you don't have to like it the way they like it. Okay, let's say you are a breast person and you talk to the woman. Because, you know, I'm trying to tell heterosexual guys what's really going on out here. Okay, let's say y'all like women, right? Here's how it works. When it comes to sex, make sure that the way you are satisfying your breast fetish is something that y'all can strongly agree on, okay? Let's say she wants you to lick it, slurp it, right? If that is something you're truly into, then do it. Don't do it out of, I feel pressured by the woman or my homies. No, if you are a slurper and a licker comes to breasts, and she is giving you free room to do so, do it. Don't do it because what your homie said. Don't do it because, well, I gotta do it because the woman told. Mm-mm. Do it because that is innately who you, that's a part of your innate sexual personality. If that's a couple of the ways that you are a breast person, then do it. See, a lot of guys do stuff because of pressure. You're not doing it as much. Okay, just say, hey, I don't mind exploring this, you know, your breast. I'm just not big on it, but I'm not against it. Or if you are against it, then you should have sex with a partner that's totally in line with how you are sexually. And you have to be totally in line with how they are sexually, too. It goes both ways. Let's get back to the, or let's say you have a breast fetish, right? Be honest with yourself about what does it mean to have a breast fetish. Okay, are you willing to lick it, to slurp it? Are you willing to be open to some women allowing you to be breastfed by them? Are you willing to hold it? You can't tear it up. You can't tear their breast open. You can't do that. You can behold it, but don't injure it. Don't yank it, because some guys get some women's breasts and behinds hurt because guys hold it. They squeeze it too hard, and you could. And some guys with their nails, you can literally tear their butts and breasts. Don't do that, Pete. Don't do that. Don't do that. Ever. Never. Never. Ever. 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 So, honest with yourself about these things. If you are really into breasts, it could be, well, I like to hold, I like to squeeze it, I like to grab, I like to pinch it, I like to lick it, to slurp it, to suck on it, I like to put, you know, I'm being crass without using crass language. That's sophistication right there. So I like to, you know, put whipped cream on it, I like to oil it down, you know, I like to, you know, put cake or ice cream, and I like to put Swiss cake rolls on it and eat it up. I like to put Little Debbie's on it. I like to put caramel syrup and chocolate syrup, pancake waffle syrup on it. And I like to, you know, I like to treat it like dessert. You know, I like to put ice cream on it and treat the breast like ice cream, right? But you're still honoring the full humanity of her. Or more than one woman, because some heterosexual guys, hey, I'm a group sex haver, right? I'm not being heteronormative, because all this applies to gay porn. All this applies to gay sex outside of porn. All this applies to transgender sex within porn, without porn. Non-binary queer sex within porn, without porn. So all this applies, okay? All of this. Okay? Are you any of the same ways that you are with her breasts, about her behind? Do you like to oil it? Do you like to slurp it? Do you like to lick it? Do you like to, you know, put desserts and oils and liquids and syrups on her butt like you want with her breasts? Because do you like to rub? Do you like to caress her butt like you do with her breasts? And because sometimes some women are like, spank my breasts like they do with pine. Are you into that? And also be honest, like, are you into full exploration? Are you kinky with her breasts and butt? Are you vanilla with her breasts and butt? That means you conventional sex about it. Or are you unconventional sex about it? Are you freaky with her breasts and butt? You know? And so those are things that people have to be honest with themselves. Don't just say like a fetish. How do you like to explore the fetish? All the ways, most of the ways, some of the ways, a couple of the ways, one way? Think about it. And then when it comes to a woman's vagina, right? Some guys feel like, no, I'm going to just, you know, penetrate it, but she gotta blow me off. No, no, no. She can't be the only one performing oral sex. That's not how it works. Whatever she does to you, you have to do it to her. Because I believe in sexual reciprocity. If she's taking the time to rock your world downstairs, you should be rocking her world downstairs too. I never liked the whole, I do one thing and do another thing. That is a false sense of sexual reciprocity, okay? Whatever I like being done to me, I'm gonna do it to other people. I want them to have the same joy that I feel sexually. So I hate sexual misogyny. That is sexual misogyny, and it's awful. And then when it comes to, like, you know, sexual racism, like, okay, you're only gonna get with a black guy because he has an enlarged male organ called the penis, and you're only gonna get with a white woman because, you know, there's barely any white women who have, you know, big butts like the sisters and the Latinas do. Sisters mean black women. I never liked that. I'm like, what about her as a person? What about him as a person? Okay, if you like big penises, why is it only limited to just black guys? Why go, I only like it if this guy is black, indigenous, person of color? Like, huh? You should like it because you don't care what color it is. You just, if you like big penises, that's your thing. Okay. But don't make that a requirement for real manhood. Don't make that like a requirement for real blackness. That's just all catastrophic and disastrous, if you ask me. So I hate sexual racism. Those are examples of sexual racism. And what about the white woman? Like, why? Well, she, I'm only dealing with her because her butt is big. So there's nothing else sexually about her that you like. It's just, well, she don't have big butts on. No, you should like, you don't, it shouldn't matter what her race or color is. If you like big butts, just say you like it. Why is it only, I only limited my likes for body parts if you're this race or that skin color or that pigmentation, or it has to be melanin? Why? Why reduce people to just mere flesh and you forsake their soul? Never liked that. So I hate sexual misogyny, I hate sexual racism, and it's another thing where I hate sexual queer phobia. Sexual queer phobia is when, okay, I'm gonna turn on guys, right? I'm gonna turn them on, have sex with guys as a guy, and then I'm gonna blast the LGBTQ+ community. Like, wait a minute. You're using gay, you're gay, but you're a gay man using other gay men for sex, and then you publicly support LGBTQ+ hate crimes, LGBTQ+ murder, and LGBTQ+ violence, but you hope that not all the gay men get killed or hang, or because you're like, well, that's not enough gay sex for me. Like, that is sexual queerphobia. I hate it. And then it's like, no, if you like other men, you shouldn't want anything bad to happen to them. Even if you're straight, you shouldn't want anything bad to happen to other communities that you're not a part of. It's called humane humanity, people. And so I had to really talk about these type of things because, you know, it's kind of like the stereotypes of Latinas. Basically, in porn, they're seen as these shy, quiet damsels in distress who suddenly they're these super extroverted, super kinky women once a white man or a black man activates them. And then with these, with Asian women, they're seen as these submissive robots who suddenly become these domineering animals once a white man or black man activates them. And then I've seen with Asian men in porn, they're seen as these Jackie Chan, Jet Li types who wow women because, what? You can be an Asian man and have a big penis? Oh my God. You see, that is a form of sexual racism and a form of sexual misandry because you're belittling the man. And you're also being body negative, and you're also sex shaming him. And it's like just because it's porn, certain types of porn has sex negativity, body shaming, sex shaming. It does have slut shaming and kink shaming and prude shaming, and some porn, even if it's all legal, it has rape culture tendencies. I'm just gonna say it. And I've seen this stuff. It's like with black men are seen as these hyper-aggressive, virile, sexual beasts that are just on these sexually reckless sexual rampages. And then you see these, you see black women, certain types of porn, they're seen as these cocoa-colored Jezebels who are sexually tormenting white men and Latino men and Asian men. And then it's kind of like in certain types of porn from what I've seen. I don't watch certain types of porn anymore because the more I sexually heal, the more types of porn I just stay away from. I don't stay away from all types of porn. Any porn that has 100% ethical practices, and obviously it's going to be legal because of the age and it's not breaking any laws, so of course that's one of the first things to think about, ethical practices of porn. But I've also saw how in black, certain types of porn, black women are seen as these ghetto hood rats, which is just racist and sexist, and you know, subjugating black women to heartless stereotypes and compassionless stigmas. And these mindless caricatures, it's just all awful. So you do have sexual caricatures and sexual stereotypes and sexual stigmas that hurt everyone in porn, mostly black indigenous men of color, black indigenous people of color, black indigenous LGBTQI+, non-binary, genderqueer, trans, queer, two-spirit people of color. And it also hurts Asian communities, and it also hurts Latina/Latino, gender and sexually diverse communities too. And so I'm talking about this off the top of my head because I'm trusting my intelligence. The more and more I heal, the more I trust my intelligence, the more I trust my wisdom, the more I trust my intellect. Doing more episodes like this, because in the past I would read some of the articles and you got all my thoughts in articles, but now you can get more of my thoughts, because sometimes reading and stopping and talking about it, I don't always want to do that. And I'm going to do that less and do episodes like this more. So let me keep going. So I really thought about the fact that for me, sexually, when it comes to fetishes, we're not talking about sexual fetishization, even though I just did a while ago in this episode, and I hate sexual fetishization, and porn, a lot of porn sadly is filled with the saturation of fetishization, which is inhumane. But I wanted to talk about how for me sexually, I thought about a sexual fetish in this way, any sexual fetish I have. I'm honest with myself about how many times I want to engage in the sexual fetishes that I have. And every fetish I have, I want to use my hands, my mouth, and my feet. If I really like something and some things, I want to fully engage with it in every which way. That's how I am. I'm a full body explorer, a full soul explorer when it comes to sex. You know, just penetration is not good enough for me. I need more. And the partners I have on screen and off screen are the same ways, I know. So, I also wanted to say, when it comes to the fetish, that even whoever you're with, they could be a woman, they could be a man, they could be queer, they could be trans, two-spirit, they could be non-binary, they could be LGBTQI+. And I don't want to leave out genderless people, because all these things happen to genderless people in porn and outside of porn. So yes, genderless people are sexual too, and I am not diminishing the asexual community, because not all asexual people are completely without sex having. They're short births. Sometimes there are times where they really want to have sex and get, you know, fiery with it, in a good way, of course. So it's ignorant to say all asexual people have no interest in sex. That is a lie. So here's what's happening. Because everything I'm saying, asexual people are included too. And everything I'm saying isn't, when I say included, think the word belong, because that's what I'm really saying. Genderless people, intersex people, hermaphrodites are all belonging in what I'm saying, because these sexual issues are universal. They are perpetuated, unfortunately, in all communities, whether you're in porn or outside of porn. All these sexual issues negatively impact all human communities. So I did think about the fact that for me sexually, I do feel the need to talk with my partners about how, like, if I'm giving a command or a suggestion, what tone of voice do we say it in? Because I've seen in certain porn where guys say it in such an inhuman way. And I'm like, okay, how can I have my tone of voice set in human ways, you know? And then when I think about suggestions or commands, for example, how many times? Because somebody can give you a command, but I also wanted to say, for myself, how often do I, or we engage in these fetishes? You know, like, if you're given a command, commands and suggestions can be vague, just like compliments or, you know, statements or questions. They could all be vague and subjective. Like, we have to say all these, do all those things with a healthy tone of voice instead of an unhealthy tone of voice, right? But a lot of times people just say things sexually, but they don't give you the specifics of it. How many times, how many positions, you know, how many positions you want me to do this to you in, or how many times you want me to do this to you. Is it one position? Is it all positions? Is it some positions? Like, okay. When you say lick, like, how do you want me to lick it? Like, lick it slow, lick it fast, lick it medium. And then we think of the fast, slow, and medium, not just with licking, but with penetration. Okay, when somebody wants you to, you know, penetrate me, like, how? I need to know how. Because in sex, they tell you to do stuff. They don't tell you how to do it, when to do it, how many times to do it, how many times we explore this fetish that you and I both like, that you have, or I have, or we have. It really should be we have. And then when it comes to sex, like, okay, when we're in position, like, how do we talk to each other? Because I don't want anything forced. I want it to be completely natural, right? Because a lot of the porn talk is very unreal, unrealistic, and just picking words to say and put them together. It's like, for me, it's like, I don't want that to be scripted. How we are, like, of course there's some exaggerations in all porn, because, you know, it's called technology camera footage, come on. But it's harmless exaggerations that some people go, you know what, if I did that, I think I could do what Antonio's doing, because if I put the camera, me and my partners, yeah, we can do that. It's exaggerations that you can actually live out. That's what I like about ethical porn. But a lot of mainstream porn, exaggeration, you really can't act out. I don't want to do anything where a person feel like they can't act it out, you know? I feel that when it also comes to, you know, sex, you know, how many times, how many positions we should do this in, what do we say to each other, what language is acceptable, what language is unacceptable, do we do pet names, do we do parental names, do we do, you know, the name, do we do slurs that are derogatory, but it's permissible between us, or do we leave that out, or how do we compliment each other, how do we remark on noticing one another in terms of physicality or personality, and should we have when does the sex get quiet, and you know, when does the sex get loud, and when does the sex get medium, you know what I mean? Who do we tell, do we not tell, are there certain people to tell, certain people not to tell? Those are all things that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to sex, right? They just don't think about when it comes to sex, which is insane to me. And then I have this, I feel for me when it comes to sex, I need to know all the specifics of the who, what, when, where, why, which is, and hows. I need to know all the who's, the what's, the when's, the why's, the which's, and the how's of sex in terms of anything, everything, and all things. Don't just give me all the who's, the what's, the when's, the which's, the why's, the how's. I'm sorry, let me correct something. I need to know all the who's, the what's, the when's, the where's, the why's, the which's, and the how's of all sexual commands, all sexual suggestions, all sexual compliments, all the sexual constructive criticism, all of the sexual suggestions, all the sexual maybes, and all the sexual yeses, all the sexual nos, all the sexual hard limits, and all the sexual hell yeses, all the sexual communication, all the sexual thought patterns, all the sexual deeds, and all the sexual emotions. Yes, give me all the whens, the whys, the whiches, the wheres, the whos, and the whats, and the where. Give me all the whos, the whats, the whens, the whiches, the wheres, and the whys, and the hows of all those things about sex. And how do we look at each other? What is staring allowed? If so, can we do it in a humane way? Is staring not allowed? Do we just gaze at each other? G-A-Z-E. Is that allowed? Is that really not allowed? I want to know. And then when it comes to sex, I feel like, you know, when it comes to sex for me, I've had this question. These questions, sets of questions, actually. What about the breathing? How can we breathe in a way that's not alarming to each other? And how do we honor each other's health conditions or genetic predispositions to certain, you know, bodily health ailments? And what about the heart attack? What about heart attacks? How can we have sex in a way where our heart is racing, but I'm not fearful that you get a heart attack on me and die in the middle of sex having? And do we call it sex having? Are you okay with the term lovemaking? Are you okay with the term copulation? Are you okay with the term sex? Are you okay with the term relations? Are you okay with the term fucking? Are you okay with the term getting some and getting it? Are you okay with the term getting laid? And are you okay with the term throwing down? Or Do you like to turn back shots? Throwing it back? Blowing backs out? Do we say that stuff? Do we not say any of these things? Questions I need to know. Are you okay with sexual slang? Are you not? Are you okay with porn talk? Are you not okay with that? Are you okay with dirty talk? Are you not okay with that? Are you okay with flirty talk? Are you not okay with that? Are you okay with poetic talk? Are you not okay with that? And if you are okay with talk, what type of talk and or talks are you okay with and not okay with? I need to know. That's how I think. And then, in terms of, like, sex for myself, I really make sure to exercise and to, you know, walk daily and to take care of myself, you know, be hygienic, smell good, deodorant, washing everywhere, including my genitals and my rectum, bathing daily and grooming my body hair well and just personal grooming well overall. So the sex can be healthy. That's one of the ways of keeping sex healthy and good and wholesome. And is the sex nurturing? Is the sex about empathetic nutrients? You know, does it have nurturance? You know what I mean? And then I think about sex for myself. I really had to think, how do we grab each other and how is that for, are those things forbidden? What about the squeezing, the holding, the grasping, the licking, the touching, the are those things allowed or not? I think about this stuff, and if so, how do we go about all these things without being injurious to one another? And then, you know, for myself, when it comes to sex, I've always felt in my spirit these questions that I really, really, you know, need help understanding. Like, how do we have the important conversations? It could be, where are the sexual settings? Do we need to get permission from certain people? Like, let's say, I'll give two examples. Let's say, we have a mutual friend in common. Should we have our sex and not tell the mutual friend? I'm not talking about living in secrecy. Or does the mutual friend need to know, right? Because I don't want to live a double life, but I don't mind some of the sex I have in life being private and people not knowing about, you know? There's a difference between double living and sexual privacy, confidentiality. Some friends are better off not knowing and some are, but no one's doing anything wrong. It just depends on the type of mutual friend we have. It depends on the type of friendship we have. But it's a healthy friendship. Healthy friendships are diverse. It's a relationship spectrum that we all have, like a sexual spectrum, not just a gender sexual diversity spectrum. Think about that. So, then a second example, let's say that we have a mutual talk buddy, hangout buddy. They're, you know, like the mutual friend, they're both awesome people, but do we just have private, confidential sex? Or is that hangout buddy, talk buddy like, oh, okay, I understand, it's cool, go, you know, y'all can do y'all thing, and it won't ruin what we have, just like, you know, the mutual friend. So those are things I think about with sex. And, that's why it's important to have any and all types of conversations with your partners. It could be beliefs, it could be opinions, it could be about chemistry, compatibility, personalities, temperaments. It could be about what your sexual values are and are not. It could be finances. It could be career, professionalism on the job, or be entrepreneurial. It could be about politics. It could be views on religion. It could be sexual traumas. It could be sexual hurt, sexual habits, sexual hangups. It could be just sexual history, romantic hurts, romantic habits, romantic hangups. It could be romantic traumas, you know. It could be, you know, desensitization and sensitivity issues of the past. Because bodily integrity, bodily autonomy are very important when it comes to sex. Very important. And I like the idea that sex should be free of objectification. Sex should be free of sexual objectification and the objectification of social relationships, also known as reification, dehumanization, and commodification, whether it's porn sex or outside of porn sex. You know, those are things people got to think about. And bodily autonomy, bodily integrity, and reproductive rights should be the requirements of sex, in my view. And contraceptions and birth controls, what do we use, what do we not use? You know, those are things people have to consider. And do we, you know, if we have sex with your blabbermouth, and if you are blabbermouth, do you at least blabbermouth to the right people? Are you willing to blabbermouth to any and everybody and the wrong people? That shouldn't be done. When it comes to sex for myself, I really had to help understand that for me, like, do we masturbate? Do we use erotica? Is it audio, visual, written? Those type of things about sex, right? Those are things that people have to think about. And that's why I had to make it make sense to me. And a lot of people don't make life make sense to them. And I think about these things all the time, like, do we have a social life? Do we not have a social life? All those things about sex, people gotta think about. Again, this is all off the top of my head. I'm not reading anything. I have not read anything. And so, another thing I know when it comes to sex for me is I do need sexual certainty that I am ethically pleasuring my partners and that they're ethically pleasuring me. I like to give them that sexual certainty too, because I do value sexual courtesy, sexual hospitality, sexual generosity, sexual gratitude, sexual humility, sexual love, sexual joy, sexual peace, sexual patience, sexual goodness, sexual kindness, sexual charity, being sexually modest. What that means is you are holistic sexually. You have sexual wholeness and sexual wholesomeness. That's what that means. And then I also value sexual faithfulness. You know, I honor you sexually, whether we're casual or committed. And the honor is all about being sexually considerate, being sexually thoughtful, and being sexually well-mannered. Those are important, including being sexually mild-mannered, you know, too. And I value sexual self-control and sexual self-discipline, meaning you're not placing yourself in barbaric sexual circumstances, including the partners that you have or anyone you want to sleep with. So I know it was a lot, like there's a lot of wisdom what I'm saying. And also have the non-monogamy or monogamy conversation. Are you monogamish or any type of non-monogamy you are into? Or are you, here's the truth. Are you completely monogamous? And if so, are you into casual monogamy or commitment monogamy? Because there's two types of monogamies that people don't really understand. You don't have to be committed and monogamous if you don't want to. If you do, then go do it. But monogamy is not always... See, in a committed relationship, you can have monogamous casual sex, just like you can have non-monogamous casual sex. You can have committed monogamous sex as well, of course. Some people are serial monogamous. They jump from one person to one person, but they are monogamous. And some people are serial non-monogamous. They just jump from person to person to person, not trying to be committed to anybody. But you have serial monogamous who jump from one person to person, hoping they could just stay with one person, but keeps not working out for whatever reason. But you have some people who jump from person to person to person for a myriad of reasons, you know. So those are things that people have to be honest about. And how do we go about sexual scents, sexual smell, sexual touches, sexual texture, sexual feels, you know, sexual copping feels, you know, and sexual hearing, sexual sight, sexual sound, sexual noises, sexual inaudibility, sexual audibility, sexual silence, verbal or nonverbal. Sexual taste buds, like sexual taste. And sexual memories. What memories are we giving each other? Do we have any sexual regrets or sexual remorse that we need to work out? Are we open to sexual coaching, sex therapy? Are we open to sexual surrogates? Are we open to sexual counseling? Do we need sexual trauma therapists? Do we need sexologists? Are we open to sexual literature and any kind of sexual manuals to help us out? Do we have sexually wise people in our lives? And are we sexually wise people to each other as partners? And then, for me, when it comes to sex, I've really, in my heart, and I just gotta say it, for me, what's going on in our hearts sexually? What's going on in our minds sexually? What's going on in our souls sexually? What's going on in our bodies sexually? What's going on in our personality sexually? What is our sexual personality, sexual temperaments? What are our erotic blueprint types? Do we sexually get along? Do we sexually agree more than we sexually disagree? Do we have a sexual friendship? Or is it just a hookup? Or are we just hooking up? Or do we have basic healthy understandings of each other? Do we have solid, noble characters? That doesn't mean religious. It just means, do we have integrity? Do we even value sexual integrity, sexual substance, sexual effectiveness, sexual nobility, that just means that you treat people and or you treat people right sexually and you treat a person right sexually. That's all that means. And do we value sexual moral excellence? It doesn't mean religious. It just means that we are sexually respectful, sexually honorable people. And so in closing about sex, then I'll get to organized crime part. Basically, as a global porn icon, I will be within mainstream porn, ethical porn, sex positive porn, alternative porn, independent porn, feminist porn, women's porn, and, you know, and all gender and sexually diverse porn, all adult human diversity porn, you know, to sum it all up perfectly. And all body positive porn, even, you know, porn that caters to larger, bigger people. I think that I would be the global porn icon that would be the most revered, the most beloved, the most liked, and the most respected. People would, a lot of people, even death, would try to be like me sexually. They would go, I saw the tapes and the videos and the recordings, and I want to duplicate Antonio's ethical sex on camera into my on-camera life as a porn performer. And in my off-camera sex life, I want to do what Antonio did, say what he said, and how he, I want to do how he said it, how he did it. I want to do what he felt and how he felt it. I want to do what he thought and how he thought it, and how he thought it out. So I would be a positive sexual role model on camera and off camera, and I would basically be the porn industry's favorite. That's just my sexual self-esteem. That's something that people need to have on camera, off camera. And I would basically, in closing about the sex part, like it's organized crime part, I would absolutely counteract all sex work, and I would counteract all sex work disparities. I love sex work. I just want to say that. I love adult sex work. That's the only type of sex work I like. I would counteract all disparities within sex work and within the porn industry. I would counteract all the bigotries and discriminations that do exist within sex work and porn. But more importantly, I would reform those worlds. And I would protect those worlds from total abolition. And I would say, what comes to porn for me, I would give regular income streams, you know, the 7 or 8 types that millionaires have, I would give them to retired performers of porn, semi-retired performers of porn, current performers of porn, whether they leave, whether they stay, or whether they kind of stay and they kind of leave, just in case if the banks discriminate against them or they face any type of discrimination, they'll always be taken care of by my ethical porn, ethical adult sex work industry, because all ethical porn has adults only. So I would basically be an ethical porn legend, ethical porn veteran, global, and I would be a ethical, whether in mainstream or ethical porn, all those things apply to me. And so in closing, I want to say about organized crime that I'm thankful that I never became hateful. I never became depressing. I never became chaotic. I never became disloyal. I never became an undomesticated animal. I never became a programmed robot. I never became a trained machine. And I never became a glorifier of gangsterdom. And I never became a criminal, because I am a wholesome rebel with wholesome causes. And more importantly, in the ultimate closing, I never disappointed my grandma Clara, even in organized crime. She would tell me in spirit, in my soul, "You never offended me, not one time. I was never angry at you. I'm always angry at them. I'm never mad at you. I'm always mad at them. And we're going to be mad at them together."